You go.
All right. I'll call the meeting to order. 6 o'clock.
Minutes.
Yep. So everybody had an opportunity to look over the minutes.
I did correct the spelling on...
Thank you.
Can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Very well. We'll move on to resolutions. Resolution number 67. It's a budget amendment to accept additional state monies for the family of Woodstock.
Pastor?
Yes.
Yes. And it's all state. And as a result, there wasn't an additional county contribution to it. So it's all state monies. I like state monies.
Mm-hmm. We need a motion. Sure, we'll need it moved and seconded.
All right. Yep.
So moved.
Moved. Second.
Second.
All right. Discussion? Anything? Anyone?
This is a continuation of what we did last month. I mean, last meeting. Didn't we also have...
These are different.
These are different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it's additional... It's additional funding for the same organization.
Yes.
Right.
I believe so.
Yeah, we voted last month for Family Woodstock.
Yes, we did.
Their budget.
But I don't know if it's the same exact ones.
Well, it might not be for the same program,
no,
but
because
they have, they run so many
it's
of
a number
them,
of programs,
but it's for Family Woodstock.
Mental health outreach program.
Have
it. Sorry.
Should be in our minutes, though.
But you are right, though, there were two contracts that involved Family and Gateway.
Is there anything else? That's it? Call vote?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
All right. And I apologize. I know you wanted to have somebody from the executive's office here to explain these. Future and I will make sure I'll confirm that somebody's
coming. Well, I reached out to Ken and he had a prior engagement tonight, so
okay.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been able to make it, but in the future, I think he plans on attending all of our committee meetings.
But something like this, you wouldn't want them to come and have to sit here to the meeting. That's so. This is these two, especially these two.
Yeah, I think it's...
They're just additional funding.
It's fairly self-explanatory, but...
Not all the time, no. A lot of times you have things that aren't.
Yeah, and the current resolutions. When I looked at it originally, I would have liked a little more of an explanation on it. But like you said, in the future he's going to be here if we have any questions. He sat in on our Social Services Committee the past 2 years as well, so he's always a good resource in case there's something we had.
I think on the back of it,
the
full explanation.
Right.
So, $4,845,245 for the Office of Mental Health from the state.
That's
a sizable amount, though.
Probably not enough.
No.
Nope.
Never is.
And
you get to keep the state, keep closing facilities and making it the responsibility of locals to take care of them. You have to take care of them. You know, you can't. We're lucky. If you want any questions answered about that, we have somebody.
I'll move the resolution.
You know, about all mental health programs and all that. No. Just social services.
All right, that's Resolution 68.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amending the county budget to accept additional reinvestment funding from Gateway. It's basically the same as the prior.
Yeah.
Is there any discussion?
I like also the fact that they're putting this county code funding source allotment table on here. But, I mean, so is this going to coincide with what the budget would look like? Our budget?
I'm not following your question. I'm sorry.
I
sorry about Leo.
Code type.
Yeah. Forgive me, I have no idea. I've never done that budget stuff.
I believe that's a form that's generated, though, by the state, not by the county. So it may, but it may not coincide with what you'll see on the county lines.
Yeah, I...
Because it would be nice to have, like, a table where what the budget line is going to be and how it's increased or decreased in the budget, so that when you, you know, when you have this big document here and you're looking at it, and you say, oh, they only have this much money in it, but then no,
in the
extra money for the year.
If you look in the body of the resolution, though, it should have the line numbers
yes,
are there.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it would be tough to follow it there.
No, you're
it would
right.
be nice if they if there was a way to follow it, but you'd have to have to put all these resolutions together for the.
It'd be nice, like if it was a three-ring binder, you could take the one page out, put the amended page in. So, you always ask.
That's a good idea, Carl. Why don't you do that?
Or have a program where it automatically updates it for you.
I need access to the computer.
You'd be a walking encyclopedia.
Okay. So we have a first and second, right, Carl?
Yes, it was with Litz and Papilio, first and second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Good. Carry. All right.
And Jeanette, if you want to just sign that, we can pass them on around. The minutes are there, too.
All right. On to new business. There was some discussion about moving the meeting time, date, and time to the first Monday of the month. And those whom I spoke with were in favor of that. So if anybody, you know, wants to, has any discussion on it, if it's okay with you, we're thinking of 5:45, first Monday of every month.
Later, please.
Okay.
Perfect. Gives me time to stop by Villages Arby's board meeting.
How much more time, or how much later?
At 7:30, there's a law enforcement meeting.
Yep.
So
I got here with less than a minute to spare.
Okay.
So if we move it to 6, you think?
It's about 87 miles.
Okay.
6:15.
So
if you move it too much later, you're going to not be able to get back and forth to the lawn.
I did that drive a lot.
It's going to start cutting into...
I took my door to Liz right.
Yeah, 6:15 it helped. But 5:45 is very difficult. We had a 5:45 meeting last week, and I was 20 minutes late for it.
Okay. What's the pleasure of the caucus? Of the committee?
6:30 will only give us an hour.
And some people may have to go to the law enforcement building for these, although I don't know if they're going to move it back over there.
None of us.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
you're not a
it is meeting here, though, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it is.
Yeah, but, I mean, it doesn't affect us.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
And 6:30? What it affects, though, is if you might have the clerk or someone else that wants, you know, might have a reason to maybe sit in both committees. So.
Vicki just mentioned that we have the meetings too close together in two different buildings, the press. Sometimes they have one
That's
reporter covering all of your activities, and the reporter can't get from meeting to meeting. But that's not your problem.
I just hire another reporter.
I would just make you aware of that complaint.
I don't think we've ever had. Carl, can you recall? I don't think we ever had a reporter at our
health,
and when it was personnel.
Yeah, no.
I don't think so.
Not even when we had.
It never came to.
If you could make it at
6:30.
6:15 and be fine. I can make 6:15. That's not.
And law enforcement's at what? 7:30.
7:30.
That gives
but
us
right
45
now
minutes. Okay. So far, we're 10 minutes into this meeting, and we're pretty close to me going asking for adjournment. So.
Right, but that's not
going to
be the case.
Rare.
You know,
very
so we just have a light agenda tonight. I don't know. Do you think an hour?
At least
we'll be able to get
prudent. And if you have a particularly busy meeting, then maybe you move it ahead.
Right.
Like if one night you can see
that's
that
fine
you're going to have
sure.
Something
Man,
that you
I
can
don't,
see.
I don't have a problem with trying to leave work earlier. It's just that Tuesdays and Thursdays are my heaviest days at work because we have standing meetings that start at 6:15 in the morning and go till 3:30 at night.
Understood. Yep. Okay, so...
So for now, we'll do it at 6:30, if I understand?
We'll do it
at 6:15. 6:15?
6:15.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if we need to extend the time...
I only have to drive 80
we could either move to another room.
Or then the following meeting can start across the hall. Generally, there's not.
Right, yeah.
And we should have a reasonable understanding as to what the agenda is going to look like time-wise. So, you know, if it looks like it's going to be heavy or perhaps...
There could always be a surprise.
Yeah, but that's true.
Well, it's kind of tight because if it's the first Monday, that's like our resolutions come out on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a little bit tight. But
okay. But
I'm sure Vicky's on top of it, and they'll work it out.
So we'll play by ear to see if and depending on our agenda, we'll...
To the first Monday at 6:15.
Yes.
You guys get to kick off the month.
So... At the next meeting, I will have a list if there's any conflicts with holidays on those Mondays for you. So you can reschedule those particular Mondays.
Definitely. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. Is there any more new business? Anybody have anything? Old business? What?
I noted that the board changed at Health Alliance, and I see where Glenn Decker... is the, if I read that right, I'm pretty sure I did, he's the new chair, and Glenn, what was he of it, Social Services, he was the director, commissioner of Social Services, so he's...
Before that, he was head of JTPA.
Yeah, so I know Carl had mentioned last month, you said something about maybe... inviting him, you know. You
absolutely.
Should, you know, if you want to reach out, I can reach out.
Yeah,
or if you want to reach out to him, and invite him.
We
could
do that. Okay. Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
I'll just bring some up real quick. With your Lyme Disease Commission, is there continuity of that? I know there was like some. Maybe I heard about funding issues with. That was something I was hoping to maybe try and contribute towards the structure of it. I don't know, but down the road, if that's something that we're going to have time to look at still.
Sure. And you know, I think that, it was Bob who put that together, correct? Yeah, that. So,
almost City Provenzano.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the funding you're talking about wasn't for the Lyme Disease Committee.
Mm.
It was, we were talking at that time, extra funding for the public health.
And outreach. Outreach.
Yeah, for outreach.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's already passed. We already passed the budget, so...
And the Lyme Disease Committee is mostly awareness.
We did our job. We had our public hearing, and...
That was...
Yeah.
Included.
I mean, it's a sad situation because from what I heard from the public hearing and the people who came to speak was that the insurance companies aren't covering all the... expenses, hardly covering any of it, because of, I don't know if it's the drugs that they take in these cases where they've got full blown Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm.
One man came in, I think he owned an auto repair shop or something, lost his business.
Window. He's still in business, but it's the window.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But I mean, people Excel have gone blacks. Bankrupt just trying to keep up with the disease, and I think that there's a need to, you know, obviously we don't have that jurisdiction with insurance companies, but there, you know, there's a need, a financial need for these victims that I wasn't aware of before that commission was formed.
There are, though. I mean, if you don't have insurance, depending on what your salary is, if he lost his business, he'd be entitled to Medicaid. Everything would be paid.
I think the problem, if I understood it, just was that the protocol for medication for acne is that you can stay on antibiotics for months and months and months, and the protocol for Lyme disease is you can only have one round of the antibiotics.
Hmm.
And they were saying they should at least be able to get more than that covered. If you're asking for medication that, even if your doctor says you should have it, but the protocol doesn't allow it, insurance won't cover it. Any Medicaid, Medicaid.
And that's what the... who makes those determinations?
Well, right now...
The medical society or...
Centers for Disease Control. I think there, what it is there's two schools of thought on Lyme disease, and in the United States is behind other parts of the world. Like, the United States generally advocates 200 milligrams of doxycycline for 28 to 30 days, and the insurance companies follow that protocol. Now, if you go to other parts of the world, like the United Kingdom, and Lyme disease experts, it's known that, you know, higher dosages of doxycycline and other antibiotics are required, where people, you know, have to do multiple rounds of successive treatment, mm-hmm. and there's a cycling off and cycling back on of antibiotics, and they're switching back and forth. And in actuality, there's only about 6 or 7 antibiotics that are shown to be effective against Lyme disease. And the one statistic that Kathleen Nolan, that's very active in attending legislative meetings, mm-hmm. she's actually helped me with Lyme disease. I've had it twice myself, and she's mm-hmm. been the doctor that's helped me the most, is the one statistic she always cuts to the chase is that in the United Kingdom, they advocate a 300 milligram standard dosage for 2 to 3 months in the first round. In the United States, it's 200 milligrams for 28 to 30 days. With the difference in dosages, the rate of long-term Lyme disease is only 5% in the United Kingdom. In the United States, it's 30 to 35% with the difference in dosages there. So generally, it goes by body weight, whether, you know, you would need the difference between, say, 300 milligrams or 400 milligrams, because when you take that much doxycycline, you actually get like a toxicity-type reaction. But what I've been told is that the bifidobacterium of the Lyme disease will hide in your brain tissue, and in order to get a high enough level of doxycycline in your bloodstream and actually into your brain tissue, you have to take 400 milligrams, unless you're a person that's on the thinner side, lower body weight, you can get away with 300 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's basically the difference right there.
I think it's very controversial. And I've always felt I'm not a medical expert.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we can make those judgments, because it could be very dangerous. You have no idea what's right, what's wrong. I have no idea.
The newest school of thought is to take 1,500 milligrams on day one, skip a day, and take 1,500 on day three, and you're done.
And then you're done for good?
Yep.
Yeah, I know they say if you get bitten by a tick, the best thing you can do is get an amoxicillin shot right on the spot where the tick is removed, and then start a regimen of at least a month of doxycycline.
My doctor from day one, if I went in there with a tick bite, would put me on an antibiotic and not wait for the results.
Yeah.
And everyone in my family has had Lyme's disease.
Hmm.
More than once.
Because by the time the symptoms show up, then it's too late, because the bifidobacterium of the disease, it makes it mobile, so it'll move from head to toe to your brain tissue in, you know, a short period of time. So
it seemed to me by the end of that meeting, Erica, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a physician that's been identified as being the Lyme disease doctor, and I think he's across the river or something.
Horowitz.
So anybody that has a bad case of Lyme disease, I would say then that's where you would go. If you're not obligated to go, you can go to any doctor of your choice. So you find a doctor until you get one that's going to give you what you think is going to help you. You know, what else? Because we've had these long conversations in our committees, and we had a physician that was a member of the committee and didn't agree with anything that was being said about Lyme disease.
That's true. That's,
and he's an expert.
Mm-hmm. Well, quite honestly, the reason why I brought it up in discussion is I wanted the discussion to perhaps move in that direction, is that I thought that if we had a doctor that was more inclined to be an expert in Lyme disease on the commission versus the doctor that's on there now, because I had heard some...
What commission? There is no
Lyme commission.
It's a committee.
It was a committee.
It was a committee.
It was a committee.
But it doesn't exist anymore?
No.
Okay.
Actually, they had no authority anyway.
I just want to bring something up, because this is the health committee. Mm-hmm. It was a doctor in Kingston who was charged with illegally selling OxyContin.
Oh, yeah. Woodstock, I think, a lot of that.
Did
you see that?
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the biggest prescription drug abuses, you know, in this county right now.
Yeah.
Is OxyContin, Percocet, you know, the family of drugs. And I'm on the Ulcer Prevention Council, and we, you know, discuss this regularly. And they did a study last year among high school students. And by the time they get to 10th grade, there's like 15% of these kids have experimented, you know, with illegal prescription drugs. And one of the things that I want to do, and I've talked to Erica about this, it's all floated on the committee now. Mm-hmm. We have prescription drug drop boxes. There's six of them now, six locations. New York State will only allow them in police stations for obvious reasons. It's where you dispose of your prescription drugs, whether your doctor says don't take them anymore or they're expired or whatever. And then the police incinerate them. I don't know if it's on like a monthly basis or whatever. I would like to see more awareness of these drop boxes. And the perfect place to start would be in a pharmacy. All the pharmacies in Ulster County, all they would have to do is when they give you a prescription, either print it on the receipt, or most of the the prescriptions now come in a computerized form. Mm-hmm. They get a gazillion, you know, words on them. But if they could somehow retool that and program it to put the location in the town where they're situated of the drop box, I think that would be beneficial to the residents, because a lot of residents in Ulster County don't know that we have them, don't know how to dispose of them properly. It's illegal to flush them down the toilet. It's illegal to throw them in the garbage. Yet, you know, what do you do with your prescription drugs? If you keep them in your medicine cabinet and you got teenagers, especially if it's like an OxyContin or something, or Valium, you know, they're going to be replaced with aspirin caplets. Now, not everybody does that, but that's how we've determined a lot of these kids get a hold of them. Plus, well, with this fraudulent, alleged fraudulent little drug ring that the doctor had, these things go for $100 a piece, a pill, on the black market. So if we can, you know, keep them out of our kids, keep them away from them as best we could, that's why we have these drop boxes. And I think I talked to my pharmacy, and they would be willing to do it. And I want to do a little more legwork and go around to pharmacies and ask them or call them and see if it would be, you know, I don't want it to be a hardship on them, obviously.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think it would.
If it's something that would be easy just to program it in the computer and say, you know, it's illegal to dispose of this improperly, boom, 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 here's the location of the drop box.
Or they could even simply print it out like we do all of our information here and staple it fast to your prescription.
Right.
You know, I'm going to check with Rite Aid, because that's where I don't know why. It seems to me they sent something out that if you want to get rid of old medication, or uh-huh, that they would take it. But I'm not positive. I'll check it out.
I don't know. Can they take it? I thought that pharmacies can't take them back.
I thought they can't take them back,
but to destroy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that they can't have drop boxes.
I'll check it out. I could be wrong. I seem to remember getting something. Let me check it out.
Okay. Because I was thinking of either a suggestion or even a local law. If it's not going to cost the pharmacy any more money, it could just be a local law so that they all would comply. I don't see why they wouldn't want to comply. I mean, really, it should be the pharmaceutical companies having some kind of stewardship program to take back the medications and to destroy them, and mm-hmm, and let them take the burden of the expense. Why don't we try that approach? Well, how would we do that with national companies?
They'll just recycle extra money.
Let me see if I can make some contacts.
Because now, on a state level, I bet you could do that, because we have right now a paint stewardship program we did a memorializing resolution last year where paint companies have to take back the paint.
Soda companies have to take back the can.
That's different.
Doesn't the you're touching a nerve on that one, sir. The RRA has a couple times a year,
they do it too.
Too.
Yeah, and the don't police are there. The police actually take them.
Do they do medication?
No.
Yeah, they do.
I think they do.
They do electronic and prescription drug medication.
Yeah,
medication.
They have one special one for prescription drugs.
Yeah, you go to one side and
so
the
I think you might be surprised. And I mean, and that's well publicized. The problem is you could put all these things in place, but if the individual themselves don't...
It's got to be convenient.
Take a minute to do something that's...
It's got to be convenient. I mean, look at the highest levels. There's only an alleged... thing, but this was a medical doctor.
But I will tell you, if you put 30 people in this room and then ask them that question, there's only a few that would know. You could take them to the police department. So even though you have to take that extra time to do it, people might do it if they knew.
Because that would be,
if you don't know,
would, you know,
don't
the point know. Of the source. You get it right there when you get your prescription. And every time, you know, I mean, I get prescriptions, you know, every couple of months, and my pharmacy is booming. I mean, they're always busy.
Oh, but, they're the busiest places.
There's a lot of prescription drugs out there.
You want to believe it.
Frank was talking about how successful, because they were filling them up, filling up the boxes.
Yeah,
they weren't able to keep up with
the police station.
You were telling me how quickly
the first
that
day, the first day, they said, they can't open the thing. Well, why can't they open it? It's full.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you want to check with the RRA, just so you can have that information as to how many people partake in it, how many times a year do they do it?
I think they do it twice a year, but I'll check.
You know, maybe we could do something where they could make it a regular drop-off place. I don't know.
The thing about the RRA is it's only one location, whereas these drop boxes, our goal is to have them in
each
every
pharmacy.
Town. Yeah, we're up to six.
Idea.
I mean, they cost like $900.
Really?
Piece, so they're not, you know, they're
sturdy.
But
the box itself costs.
Oh yeah, it's a metal box.
Okay.
Because it can't, you want anybody to break into it. That's why it's a
or walk
station.
Away with it.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to put it on a street corner
walk away with it.
And have a concession.
So I wonder how they dispose it.
They incinerate it.
Incinerate it. Yeah.
The actual drugstore does?
No. The drop box.
No, what about drug? What if
I don't think they can take them. Because I asked this question at Ulster Prevention Council, and they said that they can't have a drop box in the pharmacy. It's got to be in the police station. So. It seems kind of weird because you got all those medications nice and fresh that are unexpired, and that would be the easy thing to do, right? Is to bring your old medications back
idea.
To them, but otherwise we wouldn't have to buy these drop boxes.
I think somebody would be less likely to tamper with it if it was in a police station,
well, right.
opposed to being in a drugstore. Perhaps there's some vulnerability
there.
Yeah, I don't want to put any undue burden on pharmacies, you know. But if it was as easy as
I'll find out from Rite Aid anyway.
Because I got to tell you, every time I get a prescription, I get two or three pieces of paper.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And even if they just had to simply print something out to staple to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or print it on their bags or something. Yeah. They're printing anyway.
They could do a sticky label like they do on stuff, too. Yeah. They got all kinds of labels.
Yeah. Mr. Yucks. Remember Mr. Yucks?
So could you find out the legality of our jurisdiction on that? At least, you know, to...
Well,
I've been thinking about this.
You just had a local law that, you know, passed mandating gas stations show what the prices are between cash charge and...
That didn't go through.
No, it didn't.
I thought it went through.
The sticker. Legislator Lawrence went through, not Legislator Donaldson and Gregorius.
So, but
they withdrew it.
So...
They would do it.
Why did they withdraw?
Because they didn't like the language.
Yeah, there was it had more to.
They didn't like the amendment that was done to it.
Representative from the Convenience Store Association or something of New York State, he came kind of made sense in the fact that he thought that it would be an undue burden on stations to do that. And it's singling out gas stations and nothing else, you know, like...
I believe that Legislator Donaldson, and of course I don't speak for them, Legislator Gregorius and Donaldson have believed that the amendment took the spirit of the original drafting. So, I don't know if they're going to be resuscitating.
Well, I mean, I felt at that time, I was in that, you know, I just felt, you know, people need to take some responsibility. I mean, you know, check it out when you go in the gas station. If it's the cash, is it, does it cost you more to buy a car? Don't go there again.
That's
find
my
another
point.
One.
Yeah, no, I know.
I agree with that. A small business owner a number of years ago, you know, it's not like gas stations are making this incredible amount of money selling gas. It's they get to come into the store to buy the milk and the bread and everything else that you get. Because so if you make it tougher for them, they'll do what Stewart's did. Just take it out. Don't sell it.
Yeah.
That's true. So I've been thinking about it, legislative affiliate. Yeah, in fact, this morning.
Good.
In fact, but I did hear something where pharmacies were taking them back, so I don't know if that was...
Yeah,
I heard it on the news.
I think I got
forgive me,
it.
But I don't know if it was in New York. It might have been on national news, which...
Okay.
So, but I'll find
I'll ask
find
my
out.
Pharmacy.
I'll call Rite Aid, because I practically live there, so...
Is that on Washington Avenue, that one, the new one?
No, the one on Broadway.
Broadway.
Kingston.
Okay. Yep.
Do you know who is responsible for the cost of the box? That's currently at the police stations.
They got a grant. Ulster mm-hmm. Prevention Council got a grant from. I'm not sure. It all comes from this kid in Ellenville who overdosed on his parents' OxyContin last year. He's a high school student, and they raised the money themselves to buy one. And Ulster Prevention Council got involved, and we were looking at ways that we could possibly fund that. Now, we get our money comes from Family Services and Office of Alcohol and, you know...
Oasis.
Oasis. But they weren't... Oasis didn't fund it. So I forgot who did.
It'd be nice to reach out to the pharmaceutical companies to see if they would.
That would be, yeah.
To provide.
It really would, because
they've got the deepest pockets out of it.
Yeah, I think they're making money.
They sure are. Yeah. Is that it? Any anything else?
I'll make a motion for adjournment. I'll second.
All right.
You're going to be known as the adjournment man.
Yeah.
In every
Alan Lameda was that
in
guy.
Every